Bright and early. First of all, thank you everybody for making it 9 a.m. of the last day of the conference after the attendee party. That's impressive. You must be some very brave or persistent people to be here in the morning. So my name is Jason Olson. I am a program manager on the Windows runtime at Microsoft. And today we're going to be talking about building a great Windows Store library. Really, we're going to be focusing on building a great developer experience for your Windows Store library. So if you don't want to spend around and have an hour really thinking about NuGet and project templates and item templates and V6 and Visual Studio SDK and Visual Studio extensions and all this kind of stuff, I will not feel offended in the least if there's another talk you want to go to. So I want to set that out there. There's a lot of great talks at this conference. I want to make sure that you're making the full use of your time. So to really get started, there's never been a better time to be a library developer. Right now with the Windows Store, we're looking at already there are over 80,000 apps in the Windows Store, one of the fastest growing stores in App Store history. To date, we've seen a 250 million downloads already in the first 6 months alone, and every month, almost 90% of our catalog is downloaded. So it's a great opportunity to get in there as a developer who's enabling other developers to build these great apps. We have a, you know, in this area of building great apps and enabling developers, we have a great set of partners that are out there doing fantastic work for us. This is a page we recently launched last week, I believe it was, on services.windowsstore.com, where you can find all the partners we're working with. Hey, if you're in the audience and you want to see your library or your company up there, there are some details later in the deck. The team that runs this page is available on Twitter at WinDevs. And if you tweet them, you can start interacting with them and we can get you up on this page. It's a great opportunity for outreach and to really get the word out for the great work you're doing on building Windows Store libraries. Now, if I could leave you with one thing by the end of this talk, it should be that for your Windows Store libraries, you should make it easy to acquire and use your library by integrating into Visual Studio. View Visual Studio as the developer hub. You know, to date, you know, with the keynotes that we've done, you've seen some of the great work that we've done at Microsoft via Windows Azure and ASP.NET and Azure Mobile Services and great new code editor improvements. We've done a lot of work at Microsoft to extend Visual Studio in order to build a better, robust developer experience. And it's not just us that has actually done this. Our partners are also doing this. And really, to kick off the talk kind of, you know, early in the morning, let's start geeking out a bit. It should be fun to see some of this in action. So to get that started, I'm actually going to bring Mark Miller up here to show off the great work that's being done by DevExpress in this area.
OK. Thanks, Jason. So I'm going to show CodeRush, just a whirlwind tour of CodeRush in about 5 minutes, the features that are integrated into Visual Studio. And it'll give you also an idea of just how extensible Visual Studio is. I'm going to start with some of the new debugging stuff that we have. This is an application called Drill Down Test. I'm just going to run it. I've got some breakpoints in here. And one of the things that you can see that CodeRush is doing now is we're showing you the parameter values as you're stepping into the methods. You can see right here that A side is 3, B side is 4. If I hit the F10 key to step through, I'm on a return function, a return keyword with an expression. One of the cool things that we're able to do here is we're able to actually evaluate the expression, tell you the result, without you having to copy the expression to the clipboard, bring it down to the watch, and you can see that we're going to return a 5.0 right there from that expression. The other thing that we can do is we can actually, if we're curious about that, if we're like curious as to how we got the 5.0, we can drill down into it, and we can see, oh, it's a call to mask square root passing in 25. And we just use the arrow keys to move around here, and you can see that, oh, B side times B side is 16, drill down, and B side's 4 coming in. So you can drill down into those expressions. This is an experience we give to developers, again, because Visual Studio is so easy to extend. You can hit, I'll show you another variation of this here where we see that we're, this expression is returning false, and this is before we're actually executing the expression. So we get a preview of the values before they occur. The question is, why is this going to be false? and we can again drill down into it. We say, well, we've got it's hungry or another expression, and they're both false. And then we say, well, why is this one false? And we can drill down, oh, because this one is false right here. So the green highlighting right here shows you the Boolean that determines its parent state in the Boolean expression. So your eyes can go right down to that location. All right, let me show you another thing we have to help out with debugging. I'll run this. We'll click this button to send with Gmail asynchronously. And we get an exception. And if we go in to view the detail on the exception, it looks like this. By the way, there's a lot of clicks I'm doing with the mouse here. As we move in, and we finally get to here, we see some sort of stack trace. And it's not very useful because I have to like copy it to the clipboard and then maybe do something with that. With CodeRush, we have a new tool window called called Stacks and Exceptions. Hold on. All right, let's bring that up, and we'll pop it down here. And now what we can do is we can just say copy exception detail to the clipboard. And down here you'll see the exception value. Hold on, mouse didn't seem to be sticking. I just want to bring this a little bit. Okay, so you can see this. Now, if we look at the Visual Studio call stack right here, let's bring that up. You can see this is what it looks like here. We've got just these lines right here that are available. And if we come down in here, we look at the tool window, we see essentially something that's similar in that it says, well, here the problem is in this call right here to mail address sender. But what's interesting about the way we do this is we also highlight this line right here. And if I click on this, you can see here we're actually following back in the call stack to see where that value for the argument exception was coming from. So we're actually able to trace backwards. In fact, I could take this, if we stopped debugging right now, and I take this sender piece just to show you what we're doing here, I'll introduce a local variable for it, and then let's do an extract method on this block of code right here. And again, I'm using just all CodeRush features right here. We're going to call this, let me go back here. You know what, I'm going to try one more time on this, but then there we go, okay. So mail 2. And then we'll come down here. We're just going to write a little bit of code. And there we go. And now let's run it one more time. And we'll do the call. We'll copy the detail to the clipboard. And we'll come down in here. And we scroll down. And now you can see further down the stack. So here's the problem, right? That problem line is right there. It's still the mail address sender is coming in. But if we come down here and we click this, it takes us all the way back, right? It follows it back. It follows through the send mail to call all the way back to here and gets to it. So it's pretty cool the way that does that. Next, I'm going to show you some XAML functionality that we've added. So if I want to create a grid, I can just type in the letter G, hit the space bar, specify the size of the grid like this. Let's drill into that so you zoom into that so you can see it like that. And then I just hit enter, and then it's going to build that grid for me. And I can specify the values all the way down like this. I might come down here, I want to say create a new button, I just hit the letter B like that, put some value inside of that, and I want to, in order to be able to see that, I might want to set its width equal to 180 and its height equal to 180 like this. And then I might want to create more buttons. And I want to and then just kind of keep going through this grid and creating more and more buttons like this. The problem is I have to now take this width and put it everywhere here, the width and the height, and I also might want to say the font size is equal to like 72, for example, like that. So these templates I'm using, W and H and FS for font size, I can also use in a place where I want to create a style. So I can use like the letter S for style, so say it specifies, applies to buttons. I could use the letter S again in here to specify the property like width, but I don't want to type all that in. Instead, I just want to type in width 180 like that. And I want to type in font size 72 and height 180 like that. And that's how I want to do it. That's how I want to modify the piece here. It looks like I had invalid markup, but anyway, I won't debug that because low on time. The last thing I'm going to show you is here we're going to write some code. Again, we're going to use templates. The templates that we have access to are work in both XAML and in C Sharp and VB. And so now I'm just creating a template to create a new double animation in code. Let me just run quick so you have some context on this for a second. I'm going to cut that to clipboard. We'll come back in a second. I'm going to run the app, and you can see it. This is a puzzle. And you can see right now I don't have any animation when I click on these. So what I want to do is I want to create animation for that. So we'll do that. I'll just do the template again. We'll call this this first one. We'll do make it call it vertical animation. We'll specify 150 milliseconds at the time. The from is going to be, I've already got the starting position on here already calculated for me. So for that, I'll just plug in y here. And I'll plug in 0 here. And we'll use the target will be button. And for here, I'm just going to use a template that's going to give me the transform property on y right there. And we'll add it to the storyboard. Let's run it real quickly. Whoops. And now we should be able to see vertical animation, but the horizontal is still popping. Right? OK. So let's do this. Let's copy this block of code to the clipboard and paste it down here. Select it, and we're going to use another code modification feature called rotate 90 degrees, which is going to take the x, turn it to y, the vertical to horizontal, and it's essentially like a quick renaming that it gives me, and then I just have to come down in here and change this to an x. And then we can run that. And now we should see it in both directions. And then I see Jason coming up. You got to give me like 30 seconds, Jason?
Yep, absolutely, man. Okay. Go for it.
All right. So I just want to come down here and I want to do two things in here. I want to come in here on the X, I want to introduce a format item there, and I want to do the same thing up here for the Y, because that's really the difference between those two, and I'd like the code to just be a little better. And I can come in here, I can create and introduce a constant for that, and then I can come in there and say, well, you know what, I really want to put these in their own methods, because the method's getting big. So we'll do an extract method on here. It's called create vertical animation. We'll come back in, we'll do an extract method on the second piece. And there's that piece right there. And you may have noticed down in the bottom right, I've got a little icon here. It says duplicates are found. If I click this, it's actually saying, hey, I found this duplicate code for you. And I can now come in here and I can right click and I can say consolidate into the current class. I'll say I want to put it right there. Let's close down this window. We don't need this anymore. And now we can come in to create horizontal animation and just this new piece that we extracted. We'll just call this create animation. Like that. And that's it. And so we've now got code that's cleaner. You can see the pieces that are passed in. And with that, thanks
Great.
For your time, Jason.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Some amazing stuff. And the great thing is everything that they're doing at DevExpress is available to everybody else. All the extension points you need in Visual Studio already exist. So moving on, let's go ahead and skip forward. So to kind of recap on the talk today that we're going to talk about. There we go. So the agenda for today, the demos that I'm about to show, we're not talking about keynote demos. I'm not going to show how to solve world hunger in 3 clicks here. We're actually going to peel back some of the layers of the onion, and we're going to see when you're building a great developer experience for Windows Store apps and libraries for Windows Store apps, what are some of the gotchas you run into? What are those tips and tricks that you need that are instantly going to perhaps give you a hurdle to creating that great developer experience? So we'll briefly touch on simplifying acquisition of your library, and then we'll go into the things that are necessary to build a great developer experience. And then I'll leave you with some gotchas and tips and tricks, and that will be actually before we have another partner demo coming up here from Telerik. So simple success. When you're developing a Windows Store library for Windows Store apps, you really need to make it easy for developers to succeed. Make it very simple and straightforward for developers to use your library. Encourage them to fall into the pit of success, if you will. Every hurdle that is introduced causes friction. And the more hurdles that are introduced and the more friction, pretty soon, developers will just vote with their feet and go use a different library. Something you want to avoid. So we're framework developers. We like to think about developing brand new frameworks that make it easy for Windows Store app developers. And the thing we have to think about is that just like developing a Windows Store app, to get to a great developer experience, that last 10% you have to do takes 90% of the effort. Often I know I do this all the time. I create some library code that I'm really proud of or that I think will help other developers. And then I start really with just make it easy to get the source code. I'll throw it up on GitHub, and then I'll say people can go get it on GitHub, and then I'm done. But the thing is, there's so much more that we have to think about. You know, what about the dependencies that we have? What about versioning of our library? What about when it comes to development, how do you create a great experience in Visual Studio around templates and samples and menu items, things that are going to make it a lot easier for people to use your library. And then reaching out and getting the word out for your library, there's a lot of stuff that you can leverage here as well, like the package manager and the extension manager, Visual Studio Gallery, NuGet Gallery, by targeting the Windows runtime. There's so much stuff that you can do here to help. So, talking about library acquisition, let me ask a question. How many people in the room are familiar with NuGet? Okay, a good number. Of those of you that are familiar with NuGet, how many of you have actually developed a NuGet package? Okay, a couple, but now the hands are... Yes, I know you've developed a NuGet package, Lauren. So, what is NuGet? NuGet is, think about it this way, a tool, it's simply a tool to make it easier for distribution of libraries. It takes into account dependencies, it takes into account versioning. Now, this is a little confusing. So, we're geeks in the room, we're developers, I'm a geek. So let's put it another way, you always have to sneak one of these in. If a library or application is Batman, think of NuGet as Lucius Fox. So Bruce Wayne doesn't go out there and do all the invention of the cool gadgets and tool stuff. He goes to Lucius and he says, like, I need X. I don't care how you get X, just get me X. And so then NuGet will go far if you go to it and say, I need this library. And that library may require 8 other libraries. You don't care. You simply tell NuGet, I need this library. So go get me this library, and NuGet will pull in everything else that you need. So to show that, since there's actually a good number of people in the audience that are not familiar with NuGet, let me show some stuff here. So I'm going to show you, I have developed a library that is a monogame-based library. It's built on top of monogame for game development. I'll show you an app that uses it. This is an app I developed with my 5-year-old. Very simple risk and reward game where you're trying to get acorns, and then you keep acorns, they go up, the computer can play. Some pretty fun stuff. My son loves it because there's all sorts of wacky sounds and everything that I'm not showing here. It's always great when you develop with kids. So coming in here, let's actually show you what we can do. I have a simple project here that it is essentially the hello world of game development. If I go ahead and run this, actually, it's launching on the wrong monitor. So let's do this a different way. Let's duplicate. Go back. Okay, now let's launch it. Stop it first. Then we'll launch it. So the hello world, the cornflower blue screen. So under the hood, this is actually using the library that I built called Hiromi. And if we go in here on my references, I'm going to say manage NuGet packages. And since I've already installed it, you can see that Hiromi is installed as a NuGet package. Let's go ahead and uninstall it. And all these SharpDX libraries are dependencies that Hiromi has. Well, it doesn't have, SharpDX isn't being used by anything else, so if I uninstall it, it'll remove all the SharpDX stuff as well. And now if I want to reinstall Hiromi, I'll come here to the online, and since I've already built the Hiromi package beforehand, I'm going to search for Hiromi. That goes out to the NuGet gallery that's hosted, so anybody can upload a package to the NuGet gallery. This is great. This is something that everybody in the audience can do. I'm going to go ahead and install, and then it will install all the dependencies as well and bring those into my project, and then I'm good to go. So it's something that, and actually making this package is very simple. I want to show you just how simple it is. So here I have a new spec file. This is the file that actually defines the metadata for the NuGet package, where I've already typed this up ahead of time, and if we look at it, I have my Hiromi library, the version, the kind of metadata that you would expect to see. And then I've declared the dependencies. It's really this simple to build a NuGet package. The actual building of the package, I've created a batch file here that just to kind of streamline this. that takes the Hiromi binary that I've built and deploys it into a project structure for the NuGet, and then uses this NuGet pack, where that will actually package everything together, and then it's in a new pack file that then I just take that file and I upload it to the NuGet gallery. The great thing, I won't go into much more detail than this, because on NuGet.org there's fantastic documentation. If you want to get started, it's the place to go, and you can do some very powerful stuff with that. Okay, let's switch back. So using NuGet, you can make it really easy for developers to acquire your library. No longer do they have to go actually clone your repo in GitHub or go to your website and find an MSI or anything like that. They can simply go in Visual Studio into that Manage NuGet package, search for whatever they want to do, and then grab it. So a great way to increase acquisition of your library. The next thing we're going to talk about is providing a great developer experience. And primarily around this, as I mentioned, we're going to be talking about integrating into Visual Studio. Well, first step for integrating into Visual Studio is using the Visual Studio SDK. So this download, you go install the Visual Studio SDK, and then you'll be able to do all sorts of great stuff, creating your own templates, creating your own wizards, creating toolbox controls, editor extensions. You can create a VS package, which we'll do in this talk, that shows us how to add menu items and tool windows, all sorts of great stuff. All the stuff that you saw from DevExpress, that kind of functionality and those extension points are going to be available to you once you install the Visual Studio SDK. And then once you have that all together, you can throw it into what we call a V6 file, which is, it's essentially a zip file with a V6 extension that then has some metadata associated with it that it controls install into Visual Studio. And you can throw that Visual Studio, that V6 file, up on the Visual Studio gallery on MSDN, and then once again increase your reach, have plugin directly into Visual Studio via the extension manager and all sorts of goodness. Now, the thing that I love most is that this idea of project templates, item templates, making this easier, is that it plays together really nicely with NuGet. So I can combine the two. So I can actually now create a project template, as we'll see in a minute, that at runtime, when somebody creates that project template, it'll automatically pull in the NuGet packages that are necessary, pull in the dependencies that are necessary, and make it a lot easier to get up and running with your library. Oop, scoot back one more. Okay. So let's try this again. Make sure all this is on the right monitor. Okay, so here, the simple project that we already added our package references to, we're going to create that as a project template. And there's two different approaches that we can do. I can come in here, and since I have the Visual Studio SDK installed, I can hit New Project, and under New Project, you can see, since I'm in C#, there's some item template, and there's a project template. That's pretty meta for you. It's 9 a.m. It's getting up there. Or the other way, which I'm going to do right here, is I can go to the File menu, and there's an Export Template option. Let's do that again. Where's the mouse? There you are. File, export template. Yes, I will go ahead and save changes. Now, with this export template, I can say, I want to export a project template. Choose our sample project that we're going to use. I'm going to hit next. And let's go ahead and name this empty game. So just the default one for our library. And then the other thing that I'm going to do is I'm not going to have it automatically import the template into Visual Studio. You can if you're creating your own templates for your own sake. I'm actually going to deselect that. We'll show how to deploy it all together here in a minute. So that, out in this directory, has created my template, simply a zip file. And now what I need is I need a way to deploy it into Visual Studio. So I'm going to go ahead and add another project to my solution. I'm going to go add new project. And there's this V6 project right here. That is what is going to be what creates our experience of deploying into Visual Studio. So let's go ahead and name this Hiromi.vs. Now I'll create that. We need to do an author in the metadata for the v6 file. I'll just say Jason Olson. Come back here, make sure I copy this, where we actually put our templates. And then install targets. Well, I want to target Windows 8.1. That's the latest and greatest. So with my v6, I want to target that, which is built on Visual Studio 2013, which is a versioning of 12. So I'm going to change this to a target version of 12. And then in assets, I'm going to simply hit new. And under the assets for new, I'm going to come in here, and I'm going to say, OK, I want to add a project template. I'm going to say add it from the file system. Now, if we browse, I'm going to browse to that directory where it was exported. And I'm simply going to choose our project template that was exported. Hit OK. And it goes ahead and pulls it. Let's create this as the default project. Set a startup project and go ahead and launch that. So we're going to F5 this. And once I drag this, once it comes up, since it's on the wrong monitor, this will launch the experimental instance of Visual Studio. So the Visual Studio that launches Visual Studio and attaches the debugger to Visual Studio. And now I can say new project in the Visual Studio that was launched. Choose C#, and let's scroll down to the bottom. You can see now we have our empty game. So very simple to actually create that project template and be able to install it easily. Let's change this directory to there and go ahead and create it. So of course, this was a Windows Store app. You know, we created the template. It should be pretty simple now. It's going ahead and creating the project. Project creation successful. And if I build it, you can see there's some errors here. If we go into references, you can see it's all the references for the NuGet packages that we installed. That's because the project template itself doesn't know about NuGet yet. So now we actually need to make it NuGet aware. So let's go ahead and close this so that we can make the corrections that we need to in here. What was that? Yes, absolutely. So we're actually going to get to that. In the v6, you can put many, many different assets, including multiple projects. Which is actually, as you'll see later when we talk about Visual Studio packages, is exactly what we have to do. OK, so coming in here, let's dig into project templates where it was created. This is where it gets fun. We're going to start rolling up our sleeves here and getting dirty a little bit. I'm going to extract all these files. And let's dig into this. OK, so the zip file, Visual Studio made a bunch of changes when we exported the project template. And it created this VS template file. If I edit this VS template file, it's a bunch of metadata that's important about the template itself. And what we need to do is we actually need to tell VS where all this interesting NuGet stuff is. So I'm going to add in some code here under my template content. And we'll get to all that other stuff that's in there here in a minute. So I'm going to say, hey, I want you to, when you're installing, I want to use the NuGet wizard and give it this data that I have a bunch of NuGet packages that have to go into the project when you're creating it. So this repository ID, once you do this, there's two primary ways to then deploy the packages themselves. Because when you deploy the template, you need the packages to go along with it. So I can either put the packages in the template itself, or since I'm going to have multiple templates, I can actually put the packages in the v6 package itself. So that's the route I'm going to take here. So I'm going to go back here. I'm going to take the product ID for my v6 that's going to contain that. And here in the repository ID, I'm going to say it comes from the v6 file. And that's all I need to do for that template. So now let's go ahead and go back here. And then all we need to do to package it back up as a template, compress it, it's emptygame.zip, and we will copy it up and replace it. Now we're ready here. Now the next thing that I need to do, there's one more piece here. I actually need to include the packages, which I've already downloaded. You can see a bunch of new pack files, new NuGet packages, that I'm going to come in here to my project, my v6 project, and let's go ahead and create a new directory. I'm going to name this packages. There are my NuGet packages, and then we just need to include them in here. So show all files. I'm going to go ahead and include that directory that we just created. And then here on these, the last step that I need is I need to specify that these are content for the v6 and that, yes, I do want to include them in the v6 package. And now let's go ahead and deploy this and create another project. Okay, come over into the right monitor. New project. And then empty game. And then I'll go ahead and create. You can see it's creating project empty 2. And now, if I can get down there this time, you can see it's adding all the NuGet packages that we need into the project template. So now it comes up. And if I go ahead and build it, we will see. Oh, we didn't catch everything. Look at this. So now there's this, the manifest for the Windows Store app, package.appx manifest references Hiromi.sampleproject for template. Well, it's kind of interesting. Our project is named empty game, and it's named after our sample. So there's obviously something that didn't get wired up correctly. So there's one more gotcha step that we have to do to actually fix this when we're creating templates for Windows Store apps. Let's go back into our project template, empty game. And I want to show you one thing. In main game, which is one of our files, you can see Visual Studio went ahead and replaced like namespace and a bunch of things with these magic templates. You can actually find these keywords and strings up on Visual Studio, up on MSDN for the Visual Studio docs. And so if we take the look, let's go back into that VS template. I'm going to edit this. If we look at this, a lot of these files, like main game, have this parameter, replace parameters equals true. But if we look at our appx manifest, by default, when we exported it, replace parameters equals false. So if I'm creating a template for an app that's a Windows Store app, I first need to say, yes, I do want you to replace stuff in that manifest. And let's go ahead and edit that manifest and do what we need to. So here in display name, I'm going to replace this with project name. There's a couple other places that I actually need to do this for. I'm going to scroll down and need to replace it here. Need to replace it below too as well. So a couple places. Now, with all that, we can zip this back up, send a zip file. I'm going to name this emptygame.zip. Copy it back up, replace. Let's go ahead and relaunch this. Come over here, Visual Studio. Let's go ahead and create a new project yet again for our empty game. I'm going to scroll down, empty game 3, go ahead and create that. That's going to create empty game 3. It's going to go ahead and pull in all the NuGet packages that we need here in a minute. And then once that's up, we'll be able to finally build it and finally deploy it. So a couple gotchas when it comes around to building templates for visuals for Windows Store apps. Let's go ahead, just for the sake of conversation. So build finally succeeded when we did this. I said launch, though. There we go. Oh, it's on my other monitor. Hey, look at that. New multi-mon support in Windows 8.1. Just drag that app over there. So cornflower blue screen. We are good to go. It now works. So let's go back here. And really quickly, let's go ahead and dive into item templates. So I have this screen now that's associated with my game that I want to go ahead and create an item template for this. Let's see how easy that is. Once again, I can do the same thing. There's two different routes you can go. You can use the C# item template templates from the Visual Studio SDK, or I'm going to go the other route as well, where I'm going to export template, choose the item template from the project. I want to do my play screen. And then here, let's name it empty screen. It's not important. Correct your typos when you actually build something, but I'm going to move on, not actually doing that. And once again, we need to add it to our V6. So it generated that zip file that we can use. I'm going to create a new asset now, and I can go ahead. And this time, I'm going to add a template, an item template, from file system. Let's navigate out there. I'm going to do empty screen, add it. Now it's added, so let's go ahead and run this. And hopefully this works for us. It would be nice. So let's open the empty game that was working last we compiled it. Expand that, and now in screens, I want to use my new template. So I'm going to say add new item, Visual C#, and if you look, I wish I had the sad trombone sound, although that may be too 90s. So empty, empty screen is nowhere to be seen here. So what happened? Why didn't that get pulled in? So let's show you another interesting little tidbit here. I'm going to create a new Windows desktop app. Let's make it WPF. Yeah, Lauren likes that idea. Microsoft employees are still allowed to say WPF. I will not say anything more than WPF, though, or I'll probably get in trouble. So let's go ahead and add new item. And now we can see in the WPF app, there's my empty screen. But it was a Windows Store item template. So what happened there? What do we need to do to resolve this? Let's show another little trick. Now we're going to start peeling back another layer. Now we're really starting to dive down. Let's bring this up. And we're going to do the same thing for our item template. I'm going to go to the item template. I'm going to extract the item template so we can see what the contents are in that item template. Empty screen, open the VS temp. And there's something that we have to do here. Well, I'm going to do Julia Child's thing, because I already know what we need to do here. I'm going to say template group ID, WinRT managed win81. And template group ID. Save that. Let's go back here into our empty screen, and let's actually check if that works. I'm going to send that. Let's name it empty screen again. And I'm going to move that back up into the item templates. Go up there. Move yonder. OK, replace it. And now we're ready to go. Let's go ahead and launch our V6 package again. Launch this. Visual Studio, I told you. Get hither. So empty game 3. Now let's go ahead and check this out. Once it comes up, I have my screens folder. I'm going to go ahead, add new item. And now you can see the empty screen is there. But I don't want to leave you with something as magical as that. The question is, how did we find that magic string? Has anybody gone down into the Visual Studio install directory and poked around and had fun? Yes, well, yeah, I see one. Anybody else poke around in the Visual Studio install directory? Fun, no, yes. Poked around, yes. Fun, no. I can certainly agree there. So let's get a little geeky here. Let's go ahead and poke around there a little bit. I'm going to go into Visual Studio 12, Common 7, IDE. Oh my goodness, this is getting nice. Item templates. Look at that. We're way down there now. Visual Studio 12, Common 7, IDE, item templates. And ooh, look at all this. I'm going to create C#. Let's go to Windows Store. 1033. Wow, this is really deep. Hub page. This is a new template, new item template that we have with Win81. So let's go ahead and open that. And you can see here in that's where Where'd it go? There it is. That's where I got the template group ID. So looking at the pre-installed ones, I was able to find that. So if you're wanting to dig into various categories or perhaps even create your own template groups, your own template categories that you want something to lie into, you can. It's really easy. Just poke around a little bit and have fun. That's what we all like to do. Okay, so the last thing I'm going to show you really quick that we can do here is I'm going to create an add new project. This time I'm going to use a Visual Studio package. And in the Visual Studio package, let's call it Hiromi.menu. Now it brings up this wizard that I can work through. So I want Visual C Sharp. I'm just going to leave the default names. Here I'm going to create a menu command. I'm going to hit next. Let's name it Developer Portal. Here I'm going to call it Developer Portal. Next. Well, for the sake of the demo, I won't do unit testing. Go ahead and click Finish. Now this generates a bunch of stuff. Let's go ahead and add it first to our V6, and I'll show you what it adds. So go back to our manifest, and let's add a new value here. Where I'm going to go ahead and add my VS package, I'm going to say from the project, and I'm going to tell it that menu. Now I can go ahead and run it. And this will go ahead and launch that experimental instance of Visual Studio again. Let's go ahead and bring that over here. And now in the Tools menu, you can see I have a Developer Portal button. As simple as that. If I click it, it's the default message box implementation that pops up. And what I can do now with that, there's some documentation that I'll point you to that's actually out on MSDN, where now I can create my own menu group. So I could create a top-level menu called Hiromi. That then you see DevExpress had this, where they had a DevExpress menu. Telerik, I believe, also has a Telerik menu that gets installed. So a lot of ways that then you're right into Visual Studio land and Visual Studio extension land, where you can reach in there and do all sorts of fun stuff with the extensions of Visual Studio. So kind of a quick tour of kind of the things that you run into. So really quickly, I'm going to actually bring Phil up to go ahead and give you a 5-minute demo on some of the great things that Telerik is doing around Windows Store apps and extensions and all that kind of fun goodness.
Great, thank you. And I love the timeout, right? All right, so first and foremost, yes, we are right here in the menu, so there's just code, Telerik. Oh, yes, we do. When you can see it, we will be showing it.
I'm on five.
So all of our user interface controls plus our productivity tools are right in Visual Studio. So we can create a new project right from here. So we have templates for all of our tooling built right there. Now, one of the things that we want to do at Telerik is make sure that we reduce friction. So for example, I have a Windows Store XAML application here. I've added the references for the RAD controls for Windows 8, which is a Visual Studio extension. And I want to go over to my toolbox, and let's add a calendar. All I need to do is drag it over, put it right in my grid, or put it in my grid. And the one thing it did for us automatically was added the namespace up here at the top, so I didn't have to worry about that. So I can just run it. It's got all the references built right into the XAML. So not a very exciting demo, but that's not the point. Let's close that down. So the other thing I want to show you is, how many of you are doing Windows Store apps with HTML and JavaScript? Oh, a few brave souls. Awesome. Well, for both JavaScript and XAML, we're right in Blend as well. So if you have a reference to your project, you know, you can right-click on your file and say Open in Blend, go to your references, and here are all the RAD controls for HTML JavaScript. And if I want to add one, I can merely drag it over here. What I really want to point out, though, if you're familiar with writing in JavaScript, one of the things that's got a little bit of friction to it is this DataWin Options tag. There's no IntelliSense for that, right? And hopefully it's going to be coming soon. But Blend is awesome because what Blend allows you to do is click on your control, and then the HTML attributes come up. So we actually have all the properties you can set on our controls are right here in the Blend menu for the HTML attributes. So that makes it very, very easy as well. So let's shut that down. All right, from a NuGet standpoint, I don't think I'm on the internet. I am on the internet. All of our products for 2012 and 2010 are available as extensions. So you have to install them first. But once they're installed, every time we do an update, we do three major updates a year and lots of minor updates throughout the year, you'll automatically get notified through Visual Studio, hey, there's updates available. Would you like to install them? So you don't have to continue going to the control panel, going out to the website. You can install the updates right here from Visual Studio. We're also in NuGet. So we have a lot of free stuff we give away. And let me see if I can actually pull this down. So all of our free stuff that we have is available through NuGet. Additionally, you can have a private NuGet store where you can have the paid versions of our software right within your company. So you don't have to worry about pushing out to the desktop if you're an IT pro. You can have your users get it right from within NuGet. Again, right within the Visual Studio ecosystem. The last thing I want to show you real quick, actually second to last thing I want to show you, is data storage. So if you're writing Windows 8 apps right now, you know that pretty much your only choice for doing relational data storage on the device is SQLite. SQLite can be, we'll say, intriguing to work with at times. So what we've done is we've added a wrapper called the data storage for both C-sharp or managed code developers as well as JavaScript developers to make it very, very simple. So this is not yet available through the extensions library because it's still in CTP, but it will be there soon. And what it allows me to do, excuse me, is simply call things like telerik.data.database.open. And then I can have this be local, roaming, or temporary. And then guess what? This is an ORM for your Windows 8 application. So I can return a scalar query as well as standard queries. So I want to select all from customers. Now, we all know not to do select star from anything, right? It's just demo code, so don't flame me on Twitter for that. And if you want to add this in your project, it's merely adding a reference. Now, once you add a reference for the Telerik data storage, we actually have a process that runs that says, oh, by the way, you also need the Visual C++ runtime package. Would you like us to add that for you into your project? So we make sure that as a developer, you don't have to remember all the moving parts. We take care of a lot of that for you. Last thing I want to show you is in the store, right? We have these things. You can download them now. They're free. And it shows all of our controls. And why do I want to show this? Well, it's you know, if you want to see what you're doing, how to use our controls, that's fine. But what I want to show you is you can right-click right here, view code, and then that code you can copy and paste right into your project, which is a great time saver for you. Now, it's not really integrating with Visual Studio, but we do integrate with Windows. And the other thing I want to show you real quick is I can pin this particular example to the Start menu. Once I pin it to the Start menu, I can quickly get into it. I don't have to go through all the different, you know, examples we have. So you can quickly reference it, pull it into your project. One more thing. I think I have a minute. So one more thing I want to show you real quick is with WinJS, we actually allow you to do unit testing for WinJS apps in process. So within the sandbox, we do testing. I didn't know I was going to have time for this, so I don't have that project loaded, so we might actually not get to show it. We're not going to get to show it, but that's okay. I'll talk through it. We notice if you have QUnit Metro in your project. So we look for that particular JavaScript file. If we find that JavaScript file, we say, hey, it looks like you want to do unit testing. However, to enable unit testing, we have to do some other things for your project. Let me see if I can real quickly. No, I guess I won't load it. So you can real quickly say, you know what, I want to do some unit testing. Let me pull in the QUnit Metro library, and then we have Visual Studio configure your project so you can do unit testing. So that's what I got.
Great. Thank you, Phil. Yeah. So as you saw, through our V6 and via project templates, all that kind of stuff, everybody has every single piece that you need to get started with building a great developer experience for your library. Now, to kind of take it the next step, let's talk about three primary tips and tricks you need to know when building a developer experience for your library, specifically for Windows 8.1. At Microsoft, we care deeply about backwards compatibility. And the thing is, that promise of backwards compatibility to users impacts all of us as library developers. Now, specifically, how does it impact us as library developers? One thing that we have to think through when we talk about apps, has anybody heard the phrase in any of their talks this week on the quirking boundary? No. So what's interesting about this is, let's say I have a Windows 8 app. Windows wants to make the guarantee that an app that was compiled for Windows 8, when it runs on Windows 8.1, runs as a user would expect it to. But the thing is, some of the system behavior in Windows 8.1 may have changed or be improved. And we don't want to switch out that behavior at runtime for an app that was compiled without it in mind, because who knows what will happen to the app. So we have this boundary that exists for apps, where when you open up Visual Studio 2013, if you open up an existing Win 8 app, it'll say, do you want to retarget Windows 8.1? If you do, then the app is specifically compiled for Windows 8.1, and then you get new functionality from Windows 8.1 that lights up. And if not, it continues working under Windows 8.0, and the app continues getting the old functionality. So what does that mean for us library developers? Test your SDK, or your library in this case, with Windows 8.1 apps. And if you need to, release a version specifically for Windows 8.1. There's a lot of great stuff that was added in Windows 8.1. It might be that you need specific functionality that lights up on Windows 8.1. In that case, make sure to release a Windows 8.1 version of your library. The other thing that we're really cautious about is for versioning not only between Windows 8 and Windows 8.1, but even going forward, we want to be very careful about making apps unstable. We don't want to load different versions and different mismatches, potentially, of system components and libraries into an app's process, because that has the potential of making that app unstable. We want to provide a promise that apps on Windows are great, and we want users to continue to have that great experience. What it means for us is, let me ask first, how many of you in the audience are native developers, like C++ developers? Okay, several of you. So what you need to know is VCLibs11. If you have a library or an application that was built for 8.0, and it has a dependency on VCLibs11, if you try to upload that to the store as a Windows 8.1 app, it will fail. You actually have to recompile the app for Windows 8.1 so that it's dependent on VCLibs12, which is the version package with Visual Studio 2013. Now, this should be as simple as a recompile. We actually have this with SQLite. SQLite has a version that they've compiled specifically with the preview bits that are going to be available to all app developers. And for that, it was as simple as, let's open the solution, compile it with 2013. Now it's dependent on VCLibs12, and we can release it. So to think about this, release a new version of your library SDK app, whatever. If it's native, build it with the Visual Studio 2013 tools if it's a Windows 8.1 app. The last thing that I would like to leave you with for tips is, think about how language runtimes can actually impact performance. So in this case, if I'm creating a Windows runtime component, one of the fantastic things about Windows runtime is I can target multiple languages. So I can create, let's say, a component that's in C# that is able to be used from JavaScript. I can create a component in C# that's used from C++. It's this great mix and match that's available because of the Windows runtime. But the thing you have to think about, especially if it's being used actively and mixed and matched, you have to think about what's the impact of like different garbage collection mentalities. How does the JavaScript garbage collector interact in the same process as the managed CLR garbage collector? There's some awkward things that can happen there. So if you are targeting several target language environments, and you should really think about leveraging native code where possible. Not only for performance, but also to avoid some of those performance impacts you get, that we're continuing to strive and get better and better and better. But we're all developers here. We know that's an evolutionary process that takes releases. So has anyone in the room been down to the Quick Start Challenge in the area in the hall, exhibition hall? So down there, there's this platform enablers booth where you can try out a bunch of partner SDKs. Down there, you'll see several of them that you can try out, and you can actually compete to win great prizes like a Sphero Ball, Clocky, a Surface RT, Surface Pro. So if you have time today before you go to the airport and you fly out, make sure to check out the Platform Enablers booth to try this Quick Start Challenge, where you can see all the great work that many different partners are doing to enable Windows Store apps. So, some of the takeaways for this talk. As I mentioned, I really want to emphasize doing that last 10%, that 90% of work, to integrate into Visual Studio to provide a great experience for your developers. It is a very important step that can, as you saw with the DevExpress tools and as you saw with the Telerik tools, can provide a very powerful experience that makes you top-notch. Now, yes, I know the talk. I promised you'll be the most popular kid in school. Caveat, you may not actually be the most popular kid in school or in your company or on the internet. But make sure that you put in that effort to actually create a great developer experience. Not only will your users appreciate it, but the users of your users will appreciate it too, using great apps that were built with great libraries. Some sources here, I mentioned the Partner Spotlight earlier. You can actually get on the Partner Spotlight if you wish. If you have a really good library out there that provides a great developer experience, you want to use it as marketing, get the word out there to all the Windows Store app developers that exist. Make sure to follow WinDevs on Twitter and go ahead and work with them to make sure that you get up on that Partner Spotlight. It's a great opportunity there. And then the Platform Enablers booth that's doing that Quick Start Challenge. There's some Visual Studio links here that'll get you started on kind of the next steps that you need in extending Visual Studio. There's a lot there. We didn't even cover some of the great things around how to extend the editor itself, like you saw with the DevExpress, with the CodeRush tools, and stuff like that. So there's a lot to do here. There's a lot of fantastic opportunities that you can do and take advantage of by extending Visual Studio. So, evaluate this session. This is the typical standard thing. I'm sure you guys have seen this 5 million times, so I'll leave that up there. Thank you, everybody, for coming to a 9 a.m. session on the last day of the conference. I appreciate it tremendously. I hope you got something out of the talk, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day here at Built. Thank you.